FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's June 19th, 2018. And no, I don't have a service dog, but I do want one because they're fun to travel with. Let's face it. Anyways, hey, as always, feel free to send us an email. Best part of my day, kl@carrielutz.com. Well, Danielle Park's with us. Danielle, I don't know whether to address you as an advisor or an advisor, but either way, it should be the same thing. But welcome back as always.
Hey, thank you. No, actually, I am registered with the SEC, as our company is, as investment counsel advisor. And so are we with the Canadian regulatory authorities. And we are fiduciaries. So we are not in the business of selling products. We're in the business of managing risk and advising clients. And only the clients pay us for the service we provide. We accept no referral fees or kickbacks from any product organization, and everything that at the fee that we charge is transparent. So that, you know, we have a duty and obligation to put the client's best interest first. And in fact, we're proud of that. And we advertise that because that makes you a standout in a world filled and populated from, you know, whether it's Canada or the US, worldwide, basically, by product sales companies, essentially, or even some that are registered as advisors and are supposed to be fiduciary work within structures which are affiliated with a sales arm or an underwriting division, where they have sort of more subtle incentives to recommend certain products because they pay a higher fee, and or they are in the business of collecting assets. So they will, for example, not advise someone to pay off a debt first before they give them the capital to manage. And I think those are breaches of the fiduciary duty. I think that's quite clear in law that that is a breach of fiduciary duty, but it is not the standard of care that is widely found in the financial sector.
And here, I thought prostitution was only legal in Nevada.
No, you know, the thing is, Carrie, I see such common themes running through the problems that ail us today. And as we were speaking beforehand, you know, it is an epidemic of breach of trust, whether it's in a customer selling model in big tech, you know, like the Facebooks and the Googles and all that, pariah style harvesting of information against people's knowledge or will, and selling them up the road, or whether it is in politicians who are being caught in all sorts of conflicts and kickback schemes, which ought to be a breach of their duty to the public who appoints them, or whether it's indeed, you know, in all the just the infighting that's going on in the among different sectors in the financial services. You know, an excellent example which people often get when I say to them, you know, we put rules around what doctors are allowed to accept from pharmaceutical companies, and we don't let pharmaceutical representatives call themselves doctors and market themselves as medical advisors to the public. And there's a reason that we don't, because they're not paid by the public. They're paid by the drug companies. Mm-hmm. So you really have to put some clean divisions in the system. And when you don't, you pay the price. And we're paying the price today by a mosh pit of illegal, or what should be illegal, what should be immoral schemes, mm-hmm. perpetrating everywhere we look. And we're paying a lot. It's a national security risk in many, many ways.
It's totally disgusting. It's legalized theft. You know, I told you I'm going to, at some point when the statute of limitation runs out, I'm going to write my book and start my new podcast, which is called Legal Theft, because that's what we have an epidemic of. You know, what they're doing is perfectly legal under the law, Danielle. What lawyers do, hosing clients with excessive depositions and, you know, sending their associates home on a private car service, you know, for $150, it's legal theft. And that's what we're suffering from. So the question is this an epidemic of morality? in every phase of society, or is there something else going on that...
Well, you can say that honesty is based on morality, but I suggest it can be based just on pure character and an interest in not devolving into complete bedlam. Because when you don't have any trust at any level, when everyone is on the take and on the make, you know, look at the CEO of Audi in Europe was arrested yesterday. Finally. And I thought that was a positive sign. Back to the Dieselgate scandal. So another completely fraudulent business model, which took advantage of people by telling them they were driving a cleaner burning engine when in fact they were lying and cheating and, you know, using that as competitive advantage to sell more vehicles and all that. So the another executive was arrested yesterday. But until we do go after people on a personal responsibility for their dishonest, illegal breaches of trust. Mm-hmm. We cannot clean the system. There, you know, we keep forgetting, of course, this is part of human nature, but we do have pendulum swings in history where you have periods of, you know, like I say, bedlam back to periods of more relative, honesty and integrity in the system. One of the reasons that we can't afford the bedlam is it leads to a complete breaking apart and anarchy in society. You know, you have a complete breakdown where masses, angry masses, end up taking back whatever they feel from those who rightly or wrongly have resources. They will get them confiscated. That's just one thing that's routinely happened throughout history. So I don't know. Again, you could say, well, I've heard people argue it's because of less religiosity in the population or a movement away from religious principles. I don't think it needs to be a religious principle. I think it needs to be a fundamental principle of a civil society that you have integrity, that you have honesty required for certain functions in the society and economy, and that you have deterrence through penal punishment going after offenders.
Right. Yeah, there's got to be accountability. If there's no accountability, then nobody has to play it straight because, hey, you can get away with anything. And I have a theory, actually, that things have really gone downhill in the U.S. since the assassination of President Kennedy. It seemed to be like the whole investigation, without getting into the whole conspiracy of who killed him and why, but just that the whole Warren Commission, the behavior of our public officials afterwards, of LBJ becoming president, everything went downhill from there, or at least started, and it never came back. You know, we had the Gulf of Tonkin resolution after that, where supposedly North Vietnam attacked U.S. naval ships, which they didn't do. It was a provocation. And it was one thing after the next, and now we've progressed. It's 55 years later, and it's only gotten worse from that point.
I think there's two themes there that you may fit with what you're saying, and I think the two ones that people miss big time are one, the explosion of population on the planet. So as we get more and more people, we have a breakdown of individual accountability in many of our institutions and units within communities. So, you know, where there was, 1,000 people in a town, you had a high propensity for people to know each other, for know what each other is up to, for people to have some social pressure to, you know, basically conform to rules or laws or at least answer to individuals they harm on an arm's length, you know, up close basis. Right. When you get an explosion in population, you get much larger systems and populations of people working, whether it's in government, whether it's in corporations. And the further you get away from that individual to individual accountability, the more corruption and, you know, again, the, oh, well, everyone's doing it kind of mantra that tends to perpetrate and you know, see the spreading of this behavior. So it's that. And the second one that dovetails into that is the environmental strain, which is coming on the world by having all these billions of people on it. So it's not just about a breakdown in accountability on an individual basis, but it is literally a strain on the population in the world today. And that's driving much of, for example, migration, which is being greatly underestimated. Why all these people are moving and why you're having such pressure in places like Europe right now. You see Angela Merkel's government is under threat of losing confidence because of the migration issue, very much like what's confronting the U.S. now on your southern border and all the horror that's going on with the families being broken up. You know, this sense that migrants, and again, back to the mass population and environmental impacts driving people to go to scarcer and scarcer resources, those are major shifts. And the other thing that has been coming from the evolution of population and the distancing of accountability is the financial backbone on which all this moves. So you have a lot of money laundering, global financial institutions enabling crime, covering up, you know, and this has really brought to power many corrupt governments and enabled many corrupt regimes all over the world. Again, goes back to driving people out of areas where they're governed by regimes that are corrupt and oppressive. So in many ways, it's a larger theme puzzle. And I think there's a propensity to sort of focus on individuals that happen to be in a job this week or next month. But actually, these are huge forces that have been at work for many, many years. And again, interest rates falling over the last 30 years have given this rise to the financial sector, which has enabled all these, you know, trends, these negative trends, ultimately, which are all kind of coming to a head now at once.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with you there. Population, you know, there's only so much to go around. There's only so much the earth can support. And till we're serious about it, you know, well, there are those eugenicists that want to roll back the population to half a billion people, which they believe is ideal, but I don't know how that's going to come about. Hopefully we'll never find out. So what about all these tariffs and trade wars, talks of trade wars? What's your take on that, Danielle?
Well, it's going to be the if the U.S. tariffs on auto parts and automobiles will, if we don't get an NAFTA deal renegotiated by the end of this month, then you're going to have a hiatus or a break because of the Mexican election, because of your midterms coming up. We probably won't get back to this issue for, you know, another year. And it's already having a negative impact on the Canadian economy because we're pretty export dependent and especially aligned with the U.S. demand for our exports. So it's definitely having a negative impact on the Canadian economy, which is already made fragile by poor policy, which has driven people to insane debt levels, which has left us less resilient to a decline in our incomes, which will naturally flow from decreased global trade and tariffs. So we will see a hit, especially in Ontario, the province that I live in the middle of the country, because some, you know, 40% of Ontario's exports are in manufacturing, and a great deal of that is in U.S. auto parts and cars. Now, when Mr. Trump talks about national security interests, and, you know, Canada took offense at the G7 to the implication that we were in some way a national security threat. I agree that this is a national security threat, but not in the way that I think Mr. Trump intended it. What I'm suggesting is that the propensity to spend, and send tons of your cash flow out of your country, and take on debt to provide this system, to allow the system to continue, is what's been happening for the last 30 years or 40 years, nearly 37 years at least. And that it is indeed a national security risk, not just for the United States, but for many countries around the world, because of this, again, sort of hoovering up of all profits into concentrated monopolies at the top, which by and large are outside the law in many important ways, and also bypass the tax system in many important ways, which has left pockets of capital deficits all over, which we've all filled with debt. So we have really got this. It is a national security interest that the current regime be reformed and changed, because it's literally breaking apart in the extremity of the financial resources of, you know, the masses versus a tinier and tinier fraction. And those conditions have always remedied themselves in a violent bursting apart, essentially, in history. So we, you know, it may be already too late for us to, you know, go back and fix the things we should have been doing for the last 20 years. We haven't. It's going to take some time to get through this messy phase now. But I am ultimately optimistic that we will see an improvement and we'll get to a time when it's less tumultuous, where people are less indebted, where we have a more sustainable structure. But I'm afraid from here to there is where we have all this conflict and angst.
Yeah, it's getting there. Well, you know, without getting into the nitty gritty of trade, which is a whole nother thing, you know, it all comes down to the dollar status as a reserve currency and a whole bunch of other factors, which we could talk days about. But, you know, there's probably legitimate issues on both sides. And but I think the refocusing of the important things on the important things, really what it's about, this tit for tat, it's probably going to hurt Canada more than the U.S., but it's going to wind up hurting everybody. Not that I'm a total free trader, but I do believe in fair trade. You know, they point out the Canadian dairy subsidies, the fact that you guys pay 300% more for milk than we do here in the States. So you're subsidizing your farmers who are, by government regulation, forced to be inefficient, who could produce much more. But how much is enough?
Yeah, and that's a function of a concentrated power in the milk lobby dictating policy, which may or may not be in the public's best interest. Indeed, I think, first of all, consuming dairy is not in the public's best interest, but that's been the systemic bias that has persisted for the past many decades. So again, when we look at what is a healthier system, we can come up with alternatives. What we have is the problem of the concentration of power in certain pockets controlling. So we're not able to just evolve and figure out what makes better sense for the 21st century, for the dynamics at hand. We're stuck with antiquated trade deals and quota systems and things that were put in place often many decades before. So again, I don't disagree with Mr. Trump that these deals need to be reevaluated. And I don't think the sunset clause idea of having, you know, looking at it in 5 years is should be a deal breaker. I think that's indeed what we need to have. Everything is very much in real time flux here, and we need to really think about how we evolve. But, you know, again, It's going to be, there's no doubt that less, first of all, another big theme that I meant to mention is the demographic one, right? We have a declining demand structure in the world naturally because we have an aging population in the world's greatest consumers, which is the West. So you're not going to lean against that sufficiently. That's a massive downtrend that we've seen. It peaked in 08 with the credit bubble, rebounded in the QE bubble a bit. But Canadian GDP, Kerry, is about where it was in 2008 today. Like, we have not made much headway. So we have less revenue coming into our country. And now we've got more debt service to make with those same dollars as rates can't fall anymore. So it's all connected. And I think that, I don't like Mr. Trump. I've said this before, but just like with Brexit, just like with him getting elected, I felt it was a necessary body blow to the status quo and the idea that they can perpetrate the same old systems indefinitely without a major shakeup. And I think that some of the there's bad that comes with these things, but some of the good will be a breaking apart of some of the old alliances. And ultimately, we need trust busting, as we've touched on before.
Oh, yeah.
We need to break up some of these monopolies that are dictating the terms of our life and ultimately quelching free market systems. Because just like Canada is an ally of the United States in every way, we are directly tied to you in many ways philosophically and also, you know, in terms of our financial prosperity. So we are not your enemy. There's no question about that. But the entire market oriented economic system is about private enterprise with intelligent government regulation. You have to have both. And what we've had is private enterprise becoming publicly traded companies who then take over regulation and drive all the policy from the top down. And that's what's really bankrupted everything.
Hey, look, Trump tried to stop the acquisition of AT&T of Time Warner. Now, I don't know what his motives were, but he did kind of have this philosophy that these companies are getting too big wanted it stopped. He sued in court. His Justice Department sued in court. You could say that he was just motivated because he hates CNN. And maybe that had something to do with it. But they lost. They lost. These mergers go ahead now. We're going to have mega, mega mergers with hundreds of billions of dollars worth of debt. And nobody's explained, Danielle, how that's going to help me, the consumer, how that's going to help society. What's in it for the customers? You know, the people that rely. And now, let's face it, we both rely upon the internet for our livelihoods. And now we got these gigundo companies that, hey, you're not even an account number. You're an account group in the millions. You have, they couldn't care less about you. It's all Pac-Man kind of, right? It's just to get bigger and bigger. There's no efficiencies that come here except they get to lay off a bunch of employees. But the entity as a whole is going to become less efficient, less responsive to customer demand, and more injurious to society as a whole.
Absolutely. And this goes back to what we touched on in the beginning about advisors and salespeople. When you have a sales culture that takes over the world and literally drives the decision-making at every single level, that's what's happened. So there's no sense of any kind of greater good anymore. It's all thrown out with the notion that the only responsibility is to shareholders and getting price of shares up and getting growth on sales. That's it. So what if we, you know, what if the idea is much more about breaking apart, creating more competition, less concentrated powers? That is actually the direction we have to go. And that's going to be a painful process. But, you know, it's not in anyone's best interest. We have the massive deficits everywhere you look to show that this model has run its course. And, you know, all we need is an economic downturn and a loss in the stock market for all of the scarring that's been left since the 2008 fiasco to resurface.
Hey, couldn't agree with you more. It's going to happen. It's going to require some kind of debt jubilee to solve it, Danielle, because these debts are unsustainable and can't be paid. At least the private debts, in theory, at least, or there used to be, you know, the bond vigilantes and the investors that would decimate a company when they acted imprudently, taking on added financial risk with really not much to gain from it. But now we don't have that anymore. Everybody's joined in this financial orgy, and everybody's going to continue to partake until there's nothing left to partake of.
And I think we're getting there. Getting there, because all we need, as I say, is for prices to rescind and sort of the tide to come back in. And you know, Mr. Trump foolishly took credit for the rising stock market shortly after his election. And he's going to want to distance himself from this downturn that's coming. And, you know, that's just classic stuff. It's not about the decisions we're making, you know, like right at the moment or who happens to be in a chair. It's about decades of mismanagement driven by a maniacal focus on sales and a breaking down of all the accountability on a personal behavior level. That's the stuff we have to put back in the system.
Yeah, that's lunacy to take responsibility for market insanity. You know the old saying, a rising tide lifts all boats, but a rapidly subsiding tide that could be the signal of a tsunami coming is going to sink all the boats together. So I don't know how we come out ahead there. Anyway, make sure you go over to Danielle's site, jugglingdynamite.com, and check out the latest work. A lot of good solid articles there addressing issues that you just don't find many other places. Hey, just email us questions for Danielle, myself. We did have a question, Danielle, but I can't find it now. But somebody was mentioning that they really enjoyed your site and found those articles really intellectually stimulating that you write. So anyways, email us, kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network, and I'll try not to let them harvest your data, but they might just want to harvest your organs because that's what these guys are after, Danielle. Anyways, we will catch up with you in a couple of weeks, and be well.
Thanks, Gary.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.